From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Ken Drews called the other day to say that he and his garden have the August lulls, the sort of annual dog days experience when it's way past spring and still way before fall color, when maybe even some of the annuals you potted up or put into your beds in May for summer color might be starting to look less perky too. What holds a garden together in such a moment? He asked as we chatted and as he looked out the window. Texture, primarily, we agreed, and at Ken's, especially some refreshing splashes of variegation, and definitely the freshness of some white flowers. So more in a moment on all of the above, but first this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
You all know Ken Drews, regular visitor to the show and author of 20 garden books and longtime friend. When he's not managing the antics of two troublemaking but gorgeous canines, he manages his extensive garden in New Jersey. Hi, Ken.
Oh, hi, Margaret.
How are the canines?
They're sleeping, thankfully.
Of course. That's good.
Of course.
They sleep
all morning. And then at 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock, it's all hell.
So before we get started, I wanted to say that you and I have been talking on the phone even more than ever lately because we're brewing a new collaboration called the Virtual Garden Club that we're about to debut. And just super quick, it's a live online kind of get together twice a month that people can subscribe to. We're going to do presentations as well as do something we can't do here on the podcast, which is answer reader and listener questions in real time. So I'm going to give more on that over at awaytogarden.com. A lot of people have been writing in and asking what's cooking. So with the transcript of this show. But I just need to know one thing, since we're almost ready to go live with that. Are you ready to become the answer man?
I am a total foliage freak. And you made me remember that. And I look at the garden, and you're right. There's some hydrangea paniculata, white flowers. And that's about it.
Yes.
Well, there's a white rose of Sharon. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's one that's sterile, so it blooms for a really long time.
Well, sometimes I think, I mean, right now I have, in terms of, you know, the white flower thing, which I'm always really relieved at this time of year that, like, I have all these self-sown Nicotianas, you know, the flowering tobaccos. And even though they're small, I'm relieved, you know, sort of thigh and knee level, you know, the lower down part of the garden. I'm relieved to see their little fresh bits of floral display. And definitely the paniculata, the panicle hydrangeas are, it's like, whew, thank goodness, you know.
Thank you.
But, you know, so you have the August lulls and maybe we both need, you know, more zinnias and whatever next year. But, What do you think the sort of the backbone of getting through the late summer period is? What do you think is the main device that you rely on?
Well, the texture is a little more subtle than the color, because I have a lot of variegated plants, and what my eye goes to is the white leaves, and then the gold leaves. And then the green leaves with the white splashes and the green leaves with the white stripes on the edges. And I know I've met so many people over the years, and this, especially in the past, who would say, oh, I hate variegated plants.
Is that how they sound? Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're like the clowns of the horticultural world.
I know. The variegation was often described as clownish, and I thought that was funny. Yeah.
But, you know, those people, when they meet a plant that's variegated at the nursery or garden center, especially if it's a plant that they have at home green, and then they see it variegated, it starts, and the floodgates open. And then they want to know everything that's variegated that comes with stripes. But there are so many variegated plants. They're just spectacular. Well, I'll tell you a story really quickly. We used to have, when we started this garden 27 years ago, we first made a nursery bed, and then we filled it up because we wanted to grow the plants on while we were clearing multiflora rose and honeysuckle shrubs, bushes.
Right. Right.
And then when that filled up, I started making splinter nurseries. That's what I called them. Little nurseries in tucked away corners. And in one splinter nursery, I would put everything that was variegated white and green and annabelle hydrangea. And then when it came time sort of to move those plants, I realized that that splinter nursery was looking pretty good. So it became what we call the cloud bed. And it's filled with variegated plants.
And the white flowers of the annabelle, huh?
And yeah. Well, and now it has the green lime hydrangea paniculata, you know, so it's sort of a chartreuse to white story with so much texture.
Right. So let's talk about texture. So let's back up from variegation for a minute before we get into sort of, because I know you have quite a collection of variegated things, and I have many fewer, but they're in key spots. So we'll go back to that, but let's just talk about that sort of textural thing. Last week on the show, I talked to someone that you know too about ferns, to Uli Lorimer at Native Plant Trust, and we talked about native ferns, of course, but you know, we were saying how one thing that we're really happy for at this time of year and all times of year, mm-hmm. even when they first open, you know, the ferns, the texture that they add is delightful and especially juxtaposed against other things. And so, but there's lots of ferny things besides literal ferns, and there's lots of other textures. So maybe let's start with texture a little bit.
Okay. Well, ferns are kind of feathery, right?
Yeah.
And I was just looking at the Amsonia hubrechtii, which has flowers in the spring and about the best fall color of any herbaceous perennial. But right now, I have to use the word cloud again. It's like out of focus, you know, it's so feathery and soft. So Amsonia hubrechtii is certainly one for great texture. You grow that, don't you?
I have some of it. I have some of the other Amsonias that I planted a million years ago. So there, I think, is their common name maybe Blue Star or something for the blue flowers? Is that right,
right.
In spring?
Oh.
Okay. And they're native to certain parts of North America. I don't even know exactly where.
North Carolina.
I think, yeah.
For hubrechtii, I think.
Yeah. Hubrechtii. And so it's got these long, very long needle-like. They're so thin as to almost be like a long needle. Like
right, 3 inches or so on 2.5 foot tall stems.
Right. So the foliage is extremely linear. And like you say, when you see it from a distance, this mass, this mound of it, it's like a cloud. And when it goes gold in the fall, it's incredible. But right now we're in the summer and the textures definitely of things like Amsonias are really a big help right now. They look light and airy. Yeah.
When you're thinking about texture and arranging texture, I always think of contrast as being one of the elements, something that I can play around with. So I might do the Amsonia with Astilboides, except I can't grow Astilboides for some reason, but I can grow Darmera. So I might have a big leaf with a little bit of texture in a lobe shape or something with something like a cloudy Amsonia, because it'll show them both off.
Right. So the two things that you just mentioned, the Astilboides and the Darmera, they have big, big, big roundish leaves. So like the Astilboides can be, I don't know what, a foot and a half or more.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's happy. I mean, any plant, it's only going to achieve its maximum performance if it's happy, if it's, you know, if it belongs, I guess, where you plant it. I mean, we've all had plants that have underperformed unhappily in our gardens. But those are so the visual is that there's this linear this cloud of these like long needle linear foliage, the Amsonia against the bold high impact of the big leafed thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the word mound. Have you ever seen the dwarf river birch, sometimes called Fox Valley? It has two names, Little King and Fox Valley. It makes a gumdrop shape perfectly without any pruning, but it's a tree. Mine's probably 8 foot tall and 8 foot wide, and it's just a mound of little leaves,
mm-hmm.
textural. And it looks like I pruned it, but I didn't.
Huh. Now we're off on mounds and texture, mounds of texture. We've taken a digression. So I'm waiting. I was just out the other day in the far bed, looking at the bush clover, Lespediza thunbergii, and it's a perennial that. It's almost like a subshrub in a sense. Like I think in warmer climates, it's woody. It's a little woodier. But here it dies to the ground but it comes up into this giant mound and it's a legume. So it's pea-like foliage. If people can visualize sort of, it has this wonderful texture of its own. So it's neither linear nor bold, nor exactly feathery, but more in the feathery direction, I guess, right? But big, it can be many feet across, 6 or so feet across and maybe 4 feet tall or something like that. I mean, it depends on the one you have, the variety you have and how you grow it and so forth. But I'm kind of looking forward to that. And it's going to have purple flowers in September. But right now it's mounted up and looking very textural.
So. I don't want to put you on the spot, but what's it next to?
Well, that's a good question. And so the reason maybe I like what it looks like is because I have a big wall of the giant Miscanthus grass, the Miscanthus giganteus, that I use as a seasonal wall to hide my compost area and my far gate, like the utility gate to the place, all across, 2 acres away from the house. It's at the far end of the property. And this wall, this is the backdrop. And then the smaller grasses and some flowers and so forth as well are in the intermediate level. And then in the front, in the middle of this wall, is the Lespediza. So it's against a linear but very statuesque backdrop of the tall Miscanthus. So again, leaves. There's no flowers yet. And obviously the grasses don't have, they technically have flowers later, but not that kind of flower. And so it works that way too.
I've got a little section of stone wall, and it's with Gramblandi boxwood and hellebore foliage. So they're very different textures, very different shapes, and so complementary or contrasty, really. And of course, no flowers, just green.
Right.
But that's a beautiful combination, I think.
Right. So I guess what we're really just saying is that if right now everyone's looking around and they're feeling like, oh, things are pooped and, I wish there were, that it doesn't have to be, let's add more annual flowers next year. And frankly, I've been a little disappointed in a couple of things that I had in pots that were looking gorgeous until maybe the second week of July and then suddenly decided they weren't going to do it anymore. A couple of new petunias that I had never tried before. And I was sorry because they were so prolific and so consistent, sort of self-cleaning, didn't have to be deadheaded. And they just, not that I have beds of petunias, but, you have some accent pots here and there, and it's nice. It ties it together. And I was kind of disappointed. So when that happens and your sort of eye-catching annuals let you down at a certain point, it's great to have these other visual attractions, like we've been mentioning. So any other texture ones you want to kind of point out?
How much time do we have?
Six or seven hours. Yeah.
If you say bamboo to any gardener, they just look at you like you're insane, but there's one genus of bamboo that is cold hardy and doesn't run. Because that's the problem with the cold hardy bamboos, is they run. And I'm sure everyone's seen whole area taken over by that gold bamboo. But I grow Fargesia, and the one I grow most is Nidida, which is kind of small, very easy to grow, very feathery, and really good for backgrounds because it can become pretty big in time, but it's just, it can form kind of a wall of soft texture and is always moving in the breeze.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that for its texture.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have any bamboo at all. I mean, it's a clumping bamboo. I maybe once a million years ago, I tried one and it didn't do it up here. It's too cold.
Yeah, you're a little cold.
Right? Yeah. But one thing I start to really look forward to as it shapes up is the view from a lot of the house, looking out the back of the house, of this sort of meadow. And I use that term loosely because mm-hmm. it's an unmown area, you know, kind of a big island of unmown wild things and a lot of little bluestem and so forth. And even before it starts to color up, before the bluestem gets its fall coloration, before all the goldenrods, which they're just starting to come in, and some of the asters, you know, do their thing a little bit later, I still like the texture. I like the sort of jumble, you know, that sort of look of a field or a meadow in nature. It's the move. I think you just said something about movement, and you know, it's the movement and it's the action, the activity of butterflies flitting in, and you know what I mean. It evokes that kind of texture of nature, of a big open field or something, even though it's a small, in my case, a small version of that. So, yeah.
You were talking about some things that get tired, and a long time ago,
like me.
No, yeah. Well, you know how lungwort, which can be very variegated with silver splashes and stuff, pulmonaria.
Yes.
It flowers and the leaves sometimes turn black.
Yes.
And I discovered that if you cut the flower stalks off, and you can even cut the whole plant back to about 2 inches, it'll push new growth that lasts through the whole season. And I've got a remarkable variegated plant that's a real showstopper. I'm back to variegation, sorry. But it's a Symphidum X Uplandicum Axminster Gold, which I first saw when Marco Stefano planted it at Wave Hill, and now you can find it to buy. Then it was so rare because it's a little tricky with propagation. But it throws up flower spikes, and it has insignificant flowers, and then the plant turns black. So, but if you cut off the flower spikes and or cut off the leaves that are black, it pushes complete new growth and lasts the rest of the season all lush and luxurious. So I don't know if that's going to work for your petunias. Maybe you should try cutting
it
back.
Yeah. And you know, the reason I used to with these sort of old-fashioned, older petunias back in the day, because they'd get kind of stringy and, you know, you'd have to kind of give them a haircut and then they'd start again. But this one just kept it was as if it was self-cleaning, like it just did it itself. And I was so impressed that I think I let it go too far because it was doing such a robust job itself. But can I just ask about that Symphidum or Symphidum, whatever it's called, Symphidum Axminster Gold. So is that like a comfrey? What is that?
It's a comfrey.
It's a comfrey. So it's a variegated comfrey.
It's big. It's really, the leaves are almost 2 feet long.
Right. So speaking of bold texture, and also the variegation, the color of the green and gold, yes, has both things.
It has sort of a gray-green and a gold color on the leaves. It's really showy, very spectacular.
Yeah.
Do you grow Arctic Willow?
I do.
That's a great texture.
Yeah, so
and
let's
color.
See. Of course, I won't be able to...
Salix... Purpurea nana.
Purpurea nana, right. And it's the foliage, again, linear, almost a little tiny needly thing. It has a bluish green cast. It's on the bluer side, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I grow that next to your, this is really odd. There's a sapling of a giant red leaf maple. So I always prune the Arctic Willow, which maybe you do too, shape it in the spring. And I cut the red maple at the same time. And it's the red maple is a shrub and the Arctic Willow is a shrub. And they're the color of the deep ruby red with the bluish, silvery blue Arctic Willow. That's great. I love that.
So, again, it's not all about flowers, even to get color.
No flowers.
Yeah, the foliage. I'm staring out the window up the hill above the meadow, and one of the plants I planted in the earliest years here was small, and I dragged it up the hill with help from a neighbor, is a copper beech. So it's purple, you know, and now it's this massive old tree and, you know, whatever. And so every day that it's in leaf, it gives me a lot of color in that direction, which is kind of fun. So So your variegation thing, let's just, you know, in these next few minutes, let's just, I mean, it can kind of, I only have a few key variegated plants, one on sort of an axial view at a distance from the backyard. So like you're in the backyard and if you look in one direction, you see it kind of beckoning, and it's a variegated, a grafted Aurelia, a spikenard that's grafted.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's white and green, this kind of crazy thing, and it gets fruit and whatever. And I have a gold and goldish and, I don't know, pale green variegated version in the front yard. So when you come in the driveway, you sort of see that as a beacon, you know, in the nearer distance. Anyway, those. And then I love the variegated cornice, the dogwood, the shrub dogwood with gold twigs called Cornus cerisea, silver and gold. A long time ago, Mount Cuba Center introduction from Delaware. And, you know, a native shrub, but with the variegated leaf and then, of course, the gold twigs in the winter. So, but I don't have a lot of other variegated plants, some hostas and so forth. You have a lot more. So just in this last, you know, few minutes or so, I want to hear a little bit about some real stalwart kind of, you know, ones you wouldn't live without kind of, because it can get to be a little much, gosh, like a crazy collection. Do you have some?
You know, well, I'm thinking about that, looking out. And I guess if you have a couple of things, maybe it seems odd, but I have a lot of things and they just sort of blend in. There's a redbud, a cerceus called Silver Cloud that has almost white leaves. It's a tree with, they're almost white. The leaves are amazing. And there's I'm a distance away. My eye goes right to it. I have a lot of Brunnera. I know maybe we've talked about that. It doesn't seem to be your favorite.
But no, it's not.
But it grows in dry shade.
Yeah.
And self-sows and has sex. And there's all different ones. But I do have one that I planted a couple of years ago called Alexander's Great that has silver veins. And I'm in love with a tree that is crazy. And it's a kind of white mulberry, Morris alba. And it has a name. It's called Snowflake Lobed. You never see it for sale, ever, except for one place, which is Glasshouse Works. And I got it, and it was about 4 inches tall. And that's a long time ago. Now it's a tree through the whole season. It seems to be getting worse. And I cut them off because it wants to be a big green tree, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think it took a long time because the initial cutting must have been from a side branch because it just didn't want to grow for a decade. But the leaves are remarkable. And I show it to guests when they come. Yeah, sorry.
No, it's a mulberry. Is that correct? You said Morris alba. Is that right? Mm-hmm. So it's a mulberry, and it sounds like the leaves that are desirable, the variegated ones, are almost like a stained glass or something, like, you know, these, you said, geometric sort of sections of color.
Do you know what I mean? Yes, and I've been trying to think of how to describe it, especially the shape. And people know what lobed is, but they think maybe of an oak. It's very deeply lobed. It's like a kid's drawing or something.
Mm-hmm. So those are some favorites. We have like a minute. Anything else you want to show?
Well, I love my horseradish.
Yes, you have the variegated horseradish.
Variegated horseradish. And people come, and, you know, everybody wants to grow food, and they say, do you ever harvest it? And I know if I harvested it, I wouldn't have it anymore. Of course, it's probably gigantic now.
Right, right.
And there's plenty. But, no, you know, how much horseradish do you need?
Not much.
A tablespoon?
Not much.
So I'm not going to sacrifice a big plant for that.
So speaking of edible texture, I have a big, big, big patch in a key spot of rhubarb. And everybody wants to know why, you must have so much rhubarb to eat in the spring. And I'm like, no, because I wait until way past the perfect tender time for eating the rhubarb. Because I just love this giant mound of giant leaves. You know, it's about 9 feet across and gets, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet high, but maybe 5 feet high, 4 feet high, and then it flowers, you know, at like 3 or 4 feet above that. So it's a wonderful thing.
You're not supposed to like the flowers.
I know, but I love them. So anyway, we have to stop, but we're just saying to everybody, it's not just about flowers, especially to get through times like this in the season, right? It's about leaves, 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 texture, maybe variegation, some color and so forth, and juxtaposing them. So thanks. It's good to talk to you, and I'll talk to you later, okay?
Thanks, Margaret.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And it's good to talk to all of you again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.